It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Thanks, Microsoft, for that well-timed Skype update. God almighty. And now I've got some sort of screwed-up-looking interface that thing was hell-bent on getting me to this latest version of Skype. We'll find out maybe later in the program if the damn thing works. Yes, Jim, I'm on this evening. I'm a little late because, again, ill-timed Microsoft update of Skype. I mean, it sits there all day long, does nothing, just boring, sitting there waiting for the... And I get into the chair and a Skype update is ready to install. Are you ready for the Skype update? Oh, fuck off. Oh, sorry. I'm Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. Yeah. Maybe it's because I was all geared up and ready to go and itching to get the program going and then... Skype update. But anyway, I'm here. It took 7 minutes extra to get here, but I'm here. You know, I didn't have to mention the 7 minutes late part, because frankly, the intro plays and, well, the podcast crowd doesn't know, except for the fact that the show would end like 7 minutes early. Oh well, I've given myself away again. Damn it. But here we are. It is Thursday. It is the 12th day of July. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Sparky. Sparky says never update Skype. I wouldn't. I didn't have any choice. I came in and the update had taken and just boom, done. I got to find the automatic updates and turn those little bastards off. Oh. You know, other radio programs have people who do this kind of stuff. Not me. Not me. No, no. No, not me. So, well, like I said, it looks like it wants to work. Whether it does work is entirely another matter altogether. And unfortunately, we'll have to do it the hard way and find out if it does or doesn't. Yeah, this is the new Skype update with the black background and stuff. It just looks weird. I heard once upon a time that the black backgrounds were less energy intensive, but yeah, who knows? Hey, we've got thanks to send out at the beginning of the program to our subscribers, the folks who help keep about a quarter of the program on the air, or about a quarter of the month's bills paid. Thanks going out very kindly to Christopher. Thank you, Christopher. And thanks as well to Angelica in Oregon. Thank you, Angelica. Thank you very kindly indeed. To Mark in Minnesota. Thank you, Mark. Thank you very kindly to Paul in California. Paul, thank you kindly. And thanks very much to Gary, our buddy Gary, in the greater New York City area. who provided me with fascinating reading material during my recent downtime when my guts got sideways. Yes. And thanks also to John. Thank you, John, who jumped in earlier today. So just a reminder of where we stand. We've got $630 in fundraising to knock things down for the up through today. And then program note. We will have to do, we'll jump right to Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow, because I'm going to be covering for Malloy tomorrow evening. So that means I'll be ending the program at 8 p.m. So just right out of the gate, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And then I'll close the program at 8 and do the Malloy program. Because, they have to be away from the mic, okay? So that's the big program note for the moment. Hey, that's a great rhyme. Thank you, Silent R. Lamar. When they update, you will be late. That's very, very good. Wait a minute. Yeah, that's cowbell worthy, Lamar. Mm-hmm. So, when they update, you will be late. True. Our buddy Little Thunder in the chat room says, two more updates and we'll be communicating by semaphore. Yeah, and an update after that, we'll be communicating by a series of squeaks and grunts. It reminds me of the old gag about, you know, how does Bill Gates change a light bulb? He doesn't. He just declares darkness to be the industry standard. Yeah. But thanks to our subscribers. Thank you, one and all. Thank you to John. Our fundraising goal is at $630. And so, you know, we'll see if we can knock some of that down over the course of the evening a little bit as we go. But, well, if we can, we can. If we can't, we can't. And, you know, the program will go until it doesn't go anymore. By the way... I hate giving jackasses airtime, but this guy, we've heard from him before because he always includes a crummy remark about my family, saying that. And the thing is, this doesn't appear to be a little right wing piece of shit. This appears to be a little. Ultra-left POS. There's always, never an actual name or anything. Probably it's either, it's probably Cranky Todd, Brain, and a couple other people. You know what I mean. I received a series of really, really vicious emails this morning, doing everything from attacking Jim. And frankly, look, Jim and I have had our disagreements over the years, but Jim's an intelligent man, and I enjoy our conversations for the most part. I don't take kindly to it when people make shitty vituperative remarks about him or the rest of y'all. And this little creep, of course, hates the Horn Family Community Congregation, despises this community. I don't know why. But he does. This is the same creep who used to send who sent the emails once about the psycho fans. Okay. I mean, this is after all Thorn in the Side Thursday, and you know, kind of ouch. Hell of a way to start the day, getting attacked like that. He's decided that that this program needs to run for free. I guess I don't know. Maybe programs, radio programs will run for free after the Apocarev or something, or, you know, when we're out there and we're all living that nothing but flowers were, you know, we've caught a rattlesnake, now we've got something for dinner. You know, the talking heads. But not right now. The program has to run and with the aid of Filthy Lucre. And this creepy little person who's, who knows what his name is, has decided that yours truly is living just a little too large out there. I guess we've just got too many bowls of beans per week. But he reserves a special degree of disdain for the horn community, and in particular disdain for for y'all. And I don't like that. I can, you know, I'm a big boy. I've got alligator hide. I can take whatever the creepy little fuck wants to throw out. But attacking this community that has held itself together with little more than, bubble gum and a gum wrapper a la MacGyver. That's just crappy. early note coming in, and I can imagine, our buddy Tony says, you know, C-SPAN was better than Jerry Springer today. Well, and then there was, and I presume by C-SPAN you mean the coverage of the Strzok hearing there in the House Government Oversight Committee hearing room. How could you tell the difference between that and Jerry Springer? Was it because Jerry Springer has a more elevated degree of civility and decorum? Ooh, there's that magic civility word. Yes, I know. yeah, we will get to that in fairly short order. Thank you, Steve. Steve says, you know, I've had my disagreements too with Jim over the years. However, Jim comes up with some of the best one-liners and out there wit of anyone I've heard. Yeah, he does. But apparently, the only thing that happens is that y'all call the program and fawn over me. I don't think our correspondent, a person of very, very small brain, understands the word the sycophant. Because we do disagree here. I think, and maybe that's the difference. We have disagreements here, but for the most part, we have them as disagreements among friends. And I know that, like, battling on radio is somehow the in thing, and it's a big deal, and it's really good for your YouTube numbers or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, I can do without it. And, of course, whoever the little jackass was who called will not, you know, won't call the program. I don't know if he'll try to sneak into the chat room, but Sparky and Steve are there, ready with the lightsaber, and pfft, you know, there won't be anything left of him. Oh, you didn't do anything, Jim. Jim says, what did I do? Oh, what did I do? Cowbell, please. What did I do? All right, here, Jim, have a cowbell. Yeah, you did nothing except engage in witty and intelligent conversation. And apparently this jealous little jackass is somehow made to feel horribly insecure by that. Meanwhile, Silent R. Lamar says, I like Jim. Find your own friend. Leave my friend alone. Yeah. Steve in New York says, just in case Douchey McDouchey Douche is listening, a sycophant is not a species of elephant. I know. Jeremy in Vermont says, I've disagreed with a few issues with most people in the Horn family, but I love the freedom to do so. And I know it's all done in an understanding way. You know, peace, love, all. Yeah, right. Well, it is possible to do that. I know the feeling. Silent R. Lamar says, I feel like King Kong with all the planes buzzing him around the Empire State Building. I think that's how the whole country feels. You're right. Darlene in Connecticut says, the Strzok hearing is still in progress, yet not one hearing on the disaster at the border with the children being kidnapped from their parents and not being reunited despite a court order to do so. And you know who would have jurisdiction over that? Among other committees in the House of Representatives? Why, look, it's the House Government Affairs Oversight Committee. It run by, Trey Gowdy. Who was especially combative today. Well, thank you, Lee. Lee. You still waters run deep. And in regard to the vicious little series of emails, the reason they hate, Lee says, is simple to understand. The email sender never learned how to love. They're sad and pitiful excuses for humans. But you know what? The pitiful human is still listening. How about that? The pitiful human is still listening. It may hate me, may hate y'all, but by God, the pitiful human is still turning on the program. And, you know, riding y'all's back. Oh, well. You are a very kind and generous community, so, it does not surprise me that you are, it's okay. Look, we put the program out for free. That's all there is to it. It's free. Nobody's ever been sent a bill. Nobody's ever been charged anything. Ben Birch has never charged anybody for access to the stream. We've never charged anybody for access to the podcast. We simply said, look, if you want it to stay on the air, we have to pay the bills. And, you know, we here can't live on love. I mean, we've gotten pretty close to living on little else from time to time. I guess it's okay with Creepy Dude if only I was out there hustling. Wait a minute, I got an email about this earlier today. Where'd it go? Oh, Flavio sent it to me. I guess Super Beats wasn't cutting it, so now he is promoting this neuro-linguistic programming. Good grief, says Flavio. You need to catch up and start promoting a pseudoscience now. Bullshit nutritional supplements don't cut it anymore. Maybe on a par with Horn Nutraceuticals, Inc., you can come up with Horn Institute of Applied Quantum Quackology. Horniac. That's pretty cool. Horniac. Horn Institute of Applied Quantum Quackology. Transactional Paralysis Heuristic Hermeneutics or something. Get cracking, says Flavio. Well, yeah, and see, our creepy dude would be A-okay with that, I guess. It's just the idea that that Agnes and I are somehow not sufficiently poverty-stricken. Because, that's what, if you really love the cause, that's what you got to do. You got to love you some poverty. There's plenty of poverty to go around, and frankly, we live pretty close to it. That's fact. But, yeah. So, just know that creepy dude out there hates your freaking guts, and didn't even have the common decency to thank you for making it possible for him to listen to the program and complain about y'all keeping it going. Good on you, I say. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Oh, dear. Ron advises us there's been an ongoing row concerning an appearance of Jordan Peterson in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, if you're not terribly familiar with Jordan Peterson, you might want to bother yourself just long enough to figure out what a horse's rear end this guy is. Ron says, I believe this guy's just another symptom of the age of Trump. If you were to construct a Venn diagram of Trump followers and Peterson followers, they'd be a virtual overlay. Don't forget the overlay of the incels, Ron. The followers of Peterson are a sad group of incels that blame everything under the sun for their pitiful existence except themselves. Dr. Peterson's just a doctor. Dude couldn't put a Band-Aid on without killing somebody. Is just another mountebank and racist in the mold of Charles Murray. He just reinforces the already held beliefs of his non-critical followers. And this guy's a real Lulu. He's got, among other things, I think we probably need reverb for this. 12 rules for life. Jesus Christ, even God had only had 10. Yeah, 12 rules for life. Yeah, he's one of those people that fetishizes the 1950s when women knew better than to put shoes on and leave the kitchen and knew that their job in life was to remain pregnant and barefoot. When people of color knew what the step-off rule was and the eyeball rule was and damned well didn't violate it. Mm-hmm. Interviewed and promoted by the New York Times, he said, the masculine spirit is under assault. It's obvious. Order is masculine. Chaos is feminine. We have to rediscover the eternal values and then live them out. This guy's a Lulu from the University of Toronto. But he then turned his shtick into a gig on YouTube and claims that he is being silenced by the left when the guy is raking in money hand over fist. We're not talking about, you know, just enough to keep a little radio program on the air. We're talking about Maybach money. You know, the good stuff. He yawps down $80,000 a month telling his pathetic followers, and they are pathetic. I don't know why I can't get a date from one of them sluts. I just want to date a hot slut. Mm-hmm. He hustles online personality tests, self-improvement, writing exercises, and he's got 12 rules. And he refuses to call a trans woman she. Yeah, he just wants to be deliberately disgusting. Yeah. And the funny thing is, I remember when all this went down. I read this article before, and this jackass, basically makes mean-spirited people feel better about being mean-spirited. Yeah. So, right. Ideas rolling in. Jeremy in Vermont says, you could always get into the cure-all type of diabetes hustle. By the way, no matter what anyone says or any magazine writes, type 1 is not curable. Type 1 can be reversed a bit, but not cured. Yeah, you can back away from type 2, and that's what I've been trying to do. going back to the hearings, not really. But David in South Carolina stands says, you know, I can't get that image of Trey Gowdy picking a banjo in Deliverance out of my head. Yeah. Sure do got a pretty mouth. Well, and that's true, too. Lee points out that creepy, cranky dude is still listening because the discussion here is riveting. It is. It's a program. What we got going on here is unlike anywhere else. Yeah, that's true. Darlene in Connecticut points out. And the prick rages on in Jim Jordan, too. Oh, God, he's on that committee. Yeah. But anyway, going back to Ron and Raleigh for a moment. On another subject, regarding Dolt 45's badgering of other members of NATO to throw more money into the bottomless hole of the so-called national defense, wasn't NATO formed as a bulwark against the Soviet menace? Since that menace no longer exists, why are we trying to get NATO members to waste 4% of their GDP on something that no longer exists? And also, since Cheeto Jesus is busy kissing Putin's ass, who are we supposed to fight? Well, that's the problem, Ron. The Soviet menace is over. The Russian menace, well, it isn't. And my thinking on it is that Julius Geyser is actually trying to get NATO to fall apart by trying to hustle more money out of them. And they'll fall to arguing. But that didn't work out so well. Trump turned around and declared victory and sailed off to his performance review with his boss. And lo and behold, Emmanuel Macron, who, by the way, isn't exactly some sort of bomb-throwing leftist, in case you're following French news, he's doing everything in his power to crush French labor unions. But he gets some slack because he pushes back on Geyser Disgustus. He immediately had issued a statement saying, no, we didn't agree to any of the shit that Donald Trump said we agreed to. No. Non. Put a nice little Gallic flavor, that'll get a little nasal. Non. Yeah. And we may have a diagnosis here. Keith says, Bob, the problem's bucket pudding. You're not selling bucket pudding. Ignorant assholes like the guy who wrote don't understand or care to understand what family means. I want to start the jackass challenge. I'll kick in $10 for the next 10 bucks. Thanks, Bob, for what you do. Thank you, Keith, for what you do to keep this thing on the air. Agnes and I couldn't. Oh, by the way, I was told to get a job. Agnes and I poured everything we had into this program years ago because, you know, we didn't fundraise for a lot of years. Got it going as well as we could. So there's a $10 challenge on the table, courtesy of Keith. And if we can get that rolling, maybe we can knock this down a hair from $630. Thank you. Thank you, Keith. Thank you very kindly. Yeah, I heard about that earlier today. I was out running around a bit. The wiggling pig is kind of not doing real good. A lot of empty space on the shelves and stuff. It's depressing. And so a lot of things you have to go all the way across the river for, and I'll do anything in my power to stay out of Wally World. So I go over to Kroger's and pay slightly higher prices. But I'm supporting union households, so that's good. Ron and Raleigh asks, have you seen that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is reopening the Emmett Till case after 65 years? What in the name of all things holy are they trying to prove? We know who did the deed and why. So the Keebler AG seeks to establish his non-racist bona fides by reopening a case that was already solved. Well, it was not solved to his satisfaction there, Ron. No, sir, it wasn't. Because in many instances, the Klan was unjustly accused of committing crimes that individuals who weren't operating with the express authority of the commissioner of the Klan and Major League Baseball had expressed written consent, had not given. So we need to reinvestigate and make sure that there were no innocent Kleagles or Cyclopses or Grand Dragons or exalted 33rd degree noble Turks who got caught up in all of that. I mean, what happened to Emmett Till was terrible, just terrible. But there's a general understanding that it was white supremacists generally what killed him. And, oh, no, wait a minute. All kidding aside, I think I know. He's going to reinforce the fact that the whole thing got going as a result of a lie. And, of course, that lie was told by one of them disgusting daughters of Eve. So maybe the reopening of the Emmett Till investigation will prove that it was all, well, you know, like the line from Margaritaville says, it's all some woman's fault. See how they work up there? You just have to. It's not a nice place to go. You don't want to be there. But if you sort of rotate your brain through the intellectual energy space, rotate it about 180 degrees to the right, you can figure out what it is these nasty little poltroons are up to. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, I was wrong. It's actually 620 because of what John did earlier. And thank you very kindly. Joseph just answered Keith's $10. So lo and behold, we're down to $600. Woohoo! Yeah. So thank you, Joseph, and thank you, Keith. And then maybe we can just keep that little $10 thing going. And, oh, I don't know, 60 folks, and we'll have the thing wiped out. Yeah. I'm just checking and thank you, Jeremy, for answering Keith. 590. We're below $600. Winning. All right. Let's see. Well, there's all kinds of chaos going on here. Sometimes things just take a minute to... Lee in New York says, Emmett Till, here's what I expect the investigation of the death of Emmett Till will yield. Attorney General Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III will announce that Emmett Till committed suicide. All those injuries were self-inflicted. Yep. Bob Ewell fell on his knife. And that's all I'm going to say, Atticus. Bob Ewell fell on his knife 32 times. Well, I guess we'd. I'd planned to do this if it was still running. So, let's just check in. I watched as much as I could earlier today. Oy. Let's see. Let's see what kind of madness is afoot there in the House Government Oversight Committee hearing rooms. Oh, goody, it's Jody Heiss of Georgia. This should be fun.
Biased as yourself to lead these two investigations at the same time, where both end up being compromised, both tainted, justice apparently not happening in either case. You deliberately, from all appearance, delayed the checking into the Hillary Clinton emails on the Wiener laptop until after the election or as close thereof, and it's just...
You know, if I live to be 1,000 and never hear the phrase Wiener laptop again, it'll be a good day.
Briefly, since it wasn't posed to you as a question.
Sir, briefly, nothing was compromised in those investigations. There were a team of folks above and below me that were involved. I was the number two in the counterintelligence division. If it was important, I had a role in the oversight of that. There were people below me, senior executive service members, unit chiefs, supervisory agents, in the field office, ASAC, supervisors, case agents, all who were working on this. To the aspect, and there are many things you said about the IG's report that were, if not, there were absolutely misrepresentations, the response and the facts, if you look at them in the report, is that within hours of hearing from New York that there was potential material that was relevant, I had assigned subordinates, supervisors, attorneys, and others to look into it, which they in turn did within hours. As a result, less than a day after finding out about it, I'd set into motion a team who had nothing to do with the Russian investigations to pursue that information. They came back and said, New York's still working on it. And my assumption from there was that they, having been assigned that task,
it's your representation of the IG report that's inaccurate.
The time of the gentleman has expired. The chair recognizes the gentleman from Arizona, Mr. Gosar, for 5 minutes.
Mr. Strzok, are you familiar with the FBI Domestic Investigation and Operations Guide, known as the DIOG?
The DIOG, yes, sir.
Okay. Now, this is a policy manual that sets forth the rules you are to follow when deciding to pursue an investigation, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you agree that the DIOG guidelines applied to your investigation of President Trump and the 2016 election, correct?
Yes, sir.
And the DIOG policy 8.1 requires that all FBI employees shall comply with policies, quote. Isn't that correct?
Sir, I believe that's absolutely true. I don't know the site.
But you're aware of that?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Now, you no doubt are aware the DOJ also issues investigation guidance instructions, correct?
Yes.
Now, specifically, DOJ guidance dated March 9th, 2012, states that federal, quote, employees are entrusted with the authority to enforce the laws of the United States and with responsibility to do so in a neutral and impartial manner. This is particularly important in an election year, end of quote. Are you aware of this guidance?
I am not, but I believe it and adhere to it, yes.
So I just want to make sure, because this is really important, because Attorney General Holder issued these instructions to all federal law enforcement agencies to conduct their investigations in a neutral and impartial manner, particularly in an election year. So once again, you're kind of familiar.
Sir, I don't recall that specific instruction. I focus on FBI policy, but that direction from the department, if it's in force, I readily accept and...
So you understand why federal employees are supposed to be politically neutral, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Everything he...
Oh, for pity's sakes. This is another maggot by the name of Paul Gosar of Arizona Stan. And do you know, sir, do you know that you have rules you have to follow? Well, yeah. I mean... Peter Strzok has 26 years of experience as an FBI agent. And make no mistake, I feel, like I said before, I feel a little bit weird defending members of the FBI knowing, you know, what the FBI has done over the years. But the fact of the matter is, they're not being gone after. The FBI is not being gone after for anything that it can be demonstrably proven that they did. The FBI is being attacked for things that exist only in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between the ears of people like Jim Jordan and Paul Gosar and Hillbilly Heiss and Kurt, I mean Trey Gowdy. It's difficult to defend yourself against someone's private fantasies a little bit more.
Supreme Court, and guess what? Why is it different for him than you?
Sir,
there's no difference here.
Because it's
hearsay. The difference between him and you is you put it in black and white.
Why is it different for him than for you? Well, I'll answer your question for you, because goddamn, I don't want to know what you've got to say. And this has been going on all day long. If ever there's been an example of utter and complete bullshit, we had an 11-hour example of it back when Hillary Clinton handed these freaks their ass, and you know they went on to admit that the only reason they were doing it was to try to harm her presidential campaign. The devil. Yeah, I know. What was interesting though was when they cut to the wide shot. There's nobody in the hearing room. It's down to just a few little maggots who want to be able to go home and say, "I stood up for our God Emperor Trump. I done it." Yes, brother and sister maggots, I was there, and I wasn't going to let the FBI shove him around by using them damn facts.
What you see in my response is a genuine passion for the United States of America. What you see is a passion as a patriot.
I got two more questions for you.
Of course
if
you do.
You're in a jury box.
Count them, dumbass.
And somebody sees these text messages. You're removed from the jury box, are you not?
Sir, I can't speculate whether
that would
happen.
By the way, you are. And the last comment, this morning, you are a smart individual. We are not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic. That is why we have...
Oh, look, a civics lesson.
Two ways, both from a democracy voting and then from the where we have the Electoral College.
Yeah, that took a little
so
while
make sure
to remember.
The time of the gentleman has expired.
Angle of order.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from Louisiana, Mr. Johnson, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
There's nothing left of Republicans.
You've taken great offense today at questions about your credibility, but for many of us, that's the real issue here, and I think it is for the American people. As we've been sitting here all day, I've been getting text messages from constituents.
I mean, the maggots do, but
concerned about this.
I've got an open question as to whether they're people.
It's shameful and a train wreck, and it feels that way to many of us. I'm playing cleanup here. Many of us will here at the end. Let me ask you a smattering of questions. Number one.
Yeah, for God's sake.
Here's what you and Ms. Page exchanged the night that Donald Trump secured the Republican nomination in late 2016. You wrote, or she wrote to you, holy blank, Cruz just dropped out of the race. It's going to be a Clinton-Trump race. Unbelievable. You responded, what? She writes back, you heard right, my friend. Now you said, now the pressure really starts to finish MYE, which we know now is the FBI code name for the Clinton email investigation. And she writes back and responds, it sure does. So here's our problem. You two are the most influential FBI personnel on the Clinton investigation. And within hours of Donald Trump securing the Republican nomination, you texted
this
her,
is right. Okay, this is representing Mike Johnson. He would be the Congress maggot. For our buddy Jack in Shreveport. He represents Shreveport and Bossier City, Babylon on the Red River. Yes, indeed. And he's just asking some cleanup questions. Good question coming from Ron and Raleigh. I know this is a House hearing, but where's our Al Franken in these proceedings, noting our best guy was bum-rushed? Jerry Nadler was bum-rushed. Elijah Cummings... Those maggots about had a baby when Elijah Cummings utilized his time. No kidding, he held up. He had staff members hold up photographs. Oh, and it just burnt their asses too. He had staff members hold up photographs of people like Michael Flynn and Rick Gates and George Papadopoulos and Alexander Vandersvan and Richard Pinedo. Why did he have his staffers hold up those signs? Because those are all people who have already pled guilty in the Russia investigation. Which, of course, the Congress maggots swear is nothing but a witch hunt. So Elijah Cummings was ready with some really big pictures of witches. Yeah. And so when he did that, when the pictures were held up, "Well, Mr. Chairman, I object. I object to the fact that that feller over there is holding up pictures of witches that's done pled guilty in this thing we keep calling a witch hunt. It's against the rules of decorum and civility here in the House of Representatives, because Rule 69.12C subsection 3 says that the only people that can point out things like that is Republicans, and we don't want to point that shit out. Then get a harump out of that guy." And then they battled over what kind of questions Strzok could be asked. The Republicans maintaining, "We can ask him any kind of question, Mr. Chairman, establishes that this man personally intended to destroy the presidential campaign of Donald J. Trump. We can ask him questions about how it was that he created that Billy Bush tape where President Trump, a good, fine, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical fundamentalist, created the Billy Bush tape where Trump is alleged to have said but never said that he grabbed women by the pussy. We can ask him kind of questions. On the other hand, we don't want Democrats asking any questions that make us look bad, okay? No more them damn photographs." Bob Goodlatte of Virginia, the old Dominion. Well, we were minutes into the hearing before he was threatening to hold Strzok in contempt. Well, okay. Do that. But it's going to be a little funny, being how you won't hold any Republicans in contempt regardless of the degree of contemptuous conduct. Meanwhile, Peter Strzok is sitting there with a smile on his face like the cat that swallowed the canary. He's all by himself. They tried to stop him from consulting with counsel, asking him things about, you know, classified information in an open forum. Oh, Jesus. Jerry Nadler was pretty good. Steve in New York says Luis Gutierrez was awesome. And also points out that the previous maggot had actually no real idea of the difference between a democracy and a republic. Now, I agree. We're not a democracy. Democracy is, if you listen to this program, is and always has been aspirational in this country and not operational. For that previous stupid fucker to suggest that popular elections in this country are functions of democracy, and him sitting in the House of Representatives that the Republicans only control because they've gerrymandered the living bejesus out of the entire country? Uh-uh. There's no democracy. We know. I mean, we've heard from John and John Bredevo and several other folks from Texas. We know. If you go to vote for a member of Congress in Texas, you are guaranteed, if you're a Democrat, to be voting in a district that has been deliberately designed to keep your vote from mattering. Because if, for instance, you redistricted Texas in a sane fashion, then the overwhelming number of members of the House would be Democrats, because the overwhelming numbers of the member of the population are Democrats in the major urban areas, whether it be Houston, San Antonio, El Paso, Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, Lubbock, Amarillo. Yeah. Because those vast open spaces are vast open spaces because they're not crowded with human beings. Just maggots. So there's that. Exactly. Sounds, too. The maggot Congress objects to sounds as well. Lee says, remember when Representative Ted Lieu played the sound of children crying for their parents and the Republicans complained that it was against the rules? Why, you can't make us... I object, Mr. Chairman. You can't make us listen to crying, screaming children that are crying and screaming because of things that our treasonous Russian asset president has done and which we fully support. It's against decorum, Mr. Chairman, decorum. You betcha. And, I conjured Jack in Shreveport. Sorry, Jack. Sigh. Yeah. That guy's mailers had all about how he was pro-life, Jesus, guns, and the rest of the usual. Also, on Emmett Till and similar, why is it that the right-wing Trumpers only manage to do any good for black people that are already, you know, dead? Well, because those are their favorite kinds of black people, Jack. Yes, abso-damn-tibbly-lutely. I now present to you a message, and with Robert in Australia's kind permission, I'm going to do my terrible Australian accent because he's written it in Australian dialect. So I hope it's going to be okay, Robert. Here's the message.
Why, Bob, here's a US $100 challenge. Because here in Australia, when someone needs a bit of help, you help them. And that's all there is to it. If that bogan who sent you the email is listening, he needs to extract the digit and stop acting like a jumped-up yorbo. Signed, Robert from Oz.
I refrain from doing my terrible Australian accent, but once it's in dialect, you're sort of constrained into the parameters of the writing. Because to repeat the word yabo in an Appalachian accent just, well, it doesn't work. So thank you. Thank you very kindly, Robert in Australia. There's a $100 challenge on the table. If that is met, then mirabile dictu, we will take the fundraising goal down to $390. And it'll actually wipe out one night's fundraising for this... for this week that we have fallen short on. Thank you, Robert. Thank you very, very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed. All right. They reached the 7 o'clock hour and they're yammering back and forth at each other since there's no Democrats to interrupt them. Let's check in.
National Security Investigator, primarily CI work, which within the Bureau we differentiate criminal, which is...
But you're familiar with criminal investigations,
yes, sir.
Correct? And you understand that as you're aggregating evidence, you're looking for a couple areas. Number one, you're looking to see if there's an act, the actus reus of a crime, right?
Yes.
You're also looking for culpable mental state.
Reus, dumbass. Right? Who
yes.
taught you,
you
to read Latin?
You have to demonstrate the culpable mental state if you're going to bring a case forward, right? Intentional, knowingly, reckless, et cetera, right?
Almost always, yes.
Yeah, unless there's some kind of strict liability, right. And you'd agree that short of some statement against interest, most of the time the culpable mental state of either intentional
or knowingly... This is representing Andy Biggs of your Arizona 5th District, representing Gilbert, Chandler, and Mesa.
I hesitate to generalize.
Trust me, it is. It is, because short of someone making a statement against interest, you've got to prove that they intended...
Sir, you're a Republican. I would not trust you with the carcass of a run-over skunk. That's the correct answer to that question.
Sometimes it's by circumstantial evidence, which, by the way, there's a jury instruction typically that goes forward that says there's no qualitative difference between circumstantial evidence and direct evidence. You'd agree with that statement, right?
Sir, I'm not
what is this, fucking law school?
Well, you've been in the court many times, right?
Well,
we're 20 seconds away from a question about the rule against perpetuities, really.
Legal terms that I don't have the education to be
okay,
able
well,
to respond to.
Okay, well,
he's not a lawyer. He's an FBI agent.
Jury instruction that says,
if you're representing to me that it's accurate, I will accept that.
Right, and then this morning, you said, and then this has been a theme, and I don't know how many umpteen times you said it, but I wrote down the one quote you gave to Chairman Goodlatte. You said, quote, my text messages are not indicative of bias, close quote. Do you still hold to that position?
I do.
Okay. Now, as we go forward here, when the FBI is trying to put together circumstantial evidence of a culpable mental state, they're looking at things such as text messages. They're looking at things such
as communications he's Perry Mason.
Between people for whatever reason, right? You'd agree with that?
I would.
Yeah. And so that indicates someone's mental state that you're going to take before a jury where you're going to say by beyond a reason.
We're not talking about a jury matter here, though. That's the problem. We're talking about the internal workings of the FBI and whether a guy should be on an investigative team or not. Nobody's going in front of a jury. God knows that these maggot congressmen would like to run right past the jury and straight to the gallows with this guy because their maggot president is a Russian asset who's probably, even as we speak, well, never mind.
Agreed. Right?
So one of the things that's been made evident here is that your statements and your communications with Ms. Page, it wasn't a one-off. It wasn't two. It wasn't three. This is a whole series. It's a whole series that goes on not for a day or a week. This goes on for a long period of time. Is that not true?
It is true.
Yeah. And so when people begin to say, was there bias on the part of Peter Strzok, they're not saying, oh, gee, on this one, just on August 8th. They're going for a whole accumulation and aggregation of various statements that you made and that Ms. Page made as well. So that leads us to the IG's statement. So when the inspector general comes in and I ask him the question, I said, look, you've said regarding Mr. Strzok and Ms. Page, you didn't find
Yeah, the inspector general came in and I looked at him and I said, what about the slithy toves that Geyer and Gimbel in the Wabe? What about those? A little cowbell going out for Lee in New York. 20 seconds away from the law on perpetuities, rule against perpetuities. Dear God, that'll go on forever. Forever, perpetuities. Sorry, Bob, couldn't resist the pun. Well played. Well played, sir. Well played. Meanwhile, note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, where's Crocodile Kincaid been? On walkabout in the Northern Territories, I'll bet. Nah, I've been cooling my heels out at a little shack in the outback called it's a little tea house called and a little sheep in town called Massey, right? They serve a fantastic tea there. They call it Koala. Not gonna tell you. They're not gonna tell the rest of the joke. Everybody already knows it. But just been in the bush. Just been in the bush. Sometimes you like to relax a bit in the bush. But thanks for the welcome back for Crocodile Kincaid, Ron. Thank you very kindly. And thanks again to Robert in Australia for the challenge. Hopefully, it will be met. Uh-oh. Representing Andy Biggs has done waving his arms about.
Oh, there were, sir.
Well, you should allow the witness to answer.
Yeah.
Why are you afraid everyone to let the witness answer the question?
Everyone will suspend, and the time of the gentleman has expired, and the chair recognizes the gentleman from Wisconsin, Mr. Grothman, for five
minutes. Sir, may I respond to the gentleman who just
spoke? No, you may not. The gentleman from Wisconsin has...
No, you might say something we don't want to hear.
Mr. Chairman, you have said throughout this hearing that at the conclusion of the questioning, the witness would be permitted to respond. Is that rule now changed?
No question directed to him.
That's not true, Mr. Chairman.
It is true.
Well, he has a response he'd like to give to the committee. You said throughout the day that was the procedure. Now you're changing it. We're just going to allow
the gentleman
to make claims.
The gentleman is
no,
The gentleman is completely out of order.
No, Mr. Chairman, you're out of order.
No, the time belongs to the gentleman from Wisconsin, and he may proceed.
Mr. Chairman, you indicated, you must remember that
the
you indicated that the gentleman could answer the question.
The chair has recognized
I beg of you to allow the gentleman at the end of this long hearing to be able to explain conflicts in representation that have been made by various persons on the panel.
That was Sheila Jackson Lee.
It seems to me that
who will brook no bullshit.
Advice of counsel, a lot of the things we want to find out here today, we're not going to find out. But I'd like to focus a little bit on the...
Now, this is Glenn Grothman, okay? This is Glenn Grothman from Wisconsin, and just so you can know, he just gave his nose a little dig there because, you know, he's going for the facts. Just the facts, just the facts. But with the Wisconsin accent. He represents Oshkosh, Sheboygan, and Fond du Lac. But Glenn Grothman is a Lulu. While he's sitting there answering his maggoty questions, just a general reminder. Here's a few quotes from good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Glenn Grothman. Mm-hmm. He's a dandy. Did people even know what homosexuality was in high school in 1975? I don't remember any discussion about that at the time. There were a few guys who would make fun of a few effeminate boys, but that's a different thing than homosexuality. Really? And you can tell that how? If people adhere to the tenets of Christianity, the acceptance of that sin will not be the norm. How society deals with it is going to determine to a certain extent how much that lifestyle flourishes, and it should not flourish. Meanwhile, there's men versus the difference in pay between men and women. In my personal experience, the reason most men make more than most women is that most men set themselves up or view themselves as breadwinners in the family. So frequently, it's not unusual to have a guy working 50 or 60 hours a week and the gals working 35 or 40 hours a week. Our country is not going to survive if we continue this war on men. Oh, I bet he's a real darling of the incels, don't you? Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And then asking about the University of Wisconsin, a fine, fine institution of higher learning, he said, does the university hate white men? But Glenn Grothman gets a real case of the sads come the winter solstice time. And Glenn Grothman, of course, now I have represented myself to the Horn Family Community Congregation as the whitest man in America, because after all, I do burn under a refrigerator bulb. I have to hose myself down with SPF 50 just to reach into the back of the thing for the French onion dip that you forgot about 3 months ago. But Glenn Grothman's pretty damn white. So, naturally, he is perfectly situated and suited to speak for black people, which, of course, he didn't hesitate to do. That's why Glenn Grothman said, of course, almost no black people today care about Kwanzaa. Just white left-wingers who try to shove this down black people's throats in an effort to divide Americans. You know how I found that out? I talked to several Negroes, 20 of them, as a matter of fact. I talked to 20 random Negroes at airports in Los Angeles and in Phoenix. And it goes on and on and on. I wonder if he's still going, you know, on and on and on. Why, yes, he is. Let's see what kind of stupidity is vomiting out of his mouth.
I mean, again, on your comment, largely ignorant hillbillies, and there are a lot of people who think like you in this swamp. Okay, it's not unusual. Probably a lot of lobbyists probably feel that way. Congressional staffers.
Yeah, you know what, Glenn Grothman? I can point one to you, and you love them, too. The folks over at Cowell Mooring, a law firm in Washington, D.C., represented, may still represent, the National Mining Association, who once said that, well, people in Appalachia have birth defects because they can't stop having sex with their kinfolk. The term they used was consanguinity.
National Defense, up until the current date, very strongly Republican. I don't know. I couldn't tell you what people did or didn't vote for this election because we don't tend to talk about that.
Guess I'm out of time.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from California, Mr. Gomez, for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I guess you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stroke, you've been on that hot seat for a number of hours. I just wanted to give you an opportunity. First, thank you for being here. Thank you for trying to answer the questions as to the best of your ability. But I want to give you at least 45 seconds to respond to any of the comments that have been made that you feel like you haven't been given the opportunity to respond to.
Yeah, this guy's a Democrat.
So I appreciate that. And one thing, two things. One, with regard to the IG and what they found, to be clear, the IG report found no act of bias by me or anybody in the FBI, period. And he said in his testimony, my understanding is the same. Two, the IG found and stated in the report that I was amongst the most aggressive people in pursuing the Hillary Clinton investigation, going after Secretary Clinton. So those facts are undisputable. They're written down, and there's no two ways to try and spin out of those. And I don't want to take your time, and so I'll try and do this in 15 seconds. The insurance policy text that has come up before, that text represented a debate on information that we had received from an extraordinarily sensitive source and method, and that typically when something is that sensitive, if you take action on it, you put it at risk. And so there's a tension there. Maybe we should, you know, just roll slow, take a typical 3-4 year counterintelligence investigation, because the more aggressive you are, the more you put it at risk. And some people said that. Some people said, hey, look, every poll is saying candidate Trump is likely not to win. Every Republican was saying that. Some people said, as a result of that, let's not risk this source. Let's go slow. What I advocated for and what I'm saying is, look, we're the FBI. We need to do our job. We need to go investigate. While it isn't likely, according to all the pollsters and everybody, that candidate Trump's going to be elected, we need to make sure we are protecting America. We need to responsibly and aggressively investigate these accusations, because you know what? If candidate Trump is elected, there might be people we need to be investigating that might be nominated for important national security positions. Everybody in America would want to know that.
Oh,
candidate
burn,
Trump would want to
Michael
know
Flynn.
That. So much like you probably won't die before you're 40.
No, thank you.
That's the meaning, sir.
No, thank you so much. I got sworn in July 11th, 2017. So I am one of the most freshman members of Congress. It was about a year ago yesterday. And I was excited to be on the Oversight Committee because I believe that Congress has a responsibility to be a check on the executive branch. But that's when it's being honest in its purpose, right? I don't believe our committees, led by the majority, has been honest in its purpose. Because if it has been, it would be treating requests by the minority with as much importance as their own. So I have a question. It's a rhetorical question. Why is it that the House Oversight Committee and the House Judiciary Committee have refused to issue a single subpoena to compel documents or witnesses from the Trump administration on any topic other than this one? It's because they don't believe and they don't care to discover the truth. They are using this process to throw more red meat to their base in order to turn it out for the midterms and to protect a president that has no moral authority to lead this country. You know, so it is kind of embarrassing. I've been watching this farce and the circus for the last 5 hours. And I wonder to myself, you know, what are people thinking? That there's grown men and women shouting over each other, insulting one another. Yeah, they try to dress it up with saying the gentleman from North Carolina, the gentle lady from California. But it's all a farce. And the American people know it. You know, we've asked for subpoenas for a variety of issues. Commerce Department and the Census Bureau withholding documents on citizenship question. Department of Justice withholding documents on request to add a citizenship question. Department of Justice withholding documents on politicized hiring allegations for immigration judges. Department of Homeland Security and Department of Justice withholding documents on gag orders against whistleblowers. White House withholding information on chartered flights. The list goes on. There's about 12 of them. But they have never issued a subpoena except on this. And the American people should ask why. Why? And the reason is because they're not interested in finding the truth or making sure that we hold this administration accountable. It's all for tossing red meat to their base. And you know what? We should never talk ill about anybody, you know, in any particular part of our country. But this president has lowered that standard. He questions immigrants. He questions the allegiance of judges, the FBI. And that, in my opinion, is insulting. And I think that we need to grow up and show that the American people that we're here to act as a responsible branch of government. And I yield back.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from Florida, Mr. Rutherford, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Strzok, when I hear you talk about your passion for America, I believe you. I can see that passion. When you talk about your love for the FBI, I see it. I believe it. When you talked about your faith in the American electorate, I believe that. Now, what concerns me is...
Oh, of course. What concerns me?
You said that you didn't trust the election. To quote you, you didn't trust the election after Russia put their finger on the scale.
Yeah.
Remember saying that earlier?
I don't believe that's exactly what I said, sir. I think I said something slightly different, but I recall that exchange.
Well, that was the meaning, right?
I don't think that was the meaning, sir. The meaning was I was very concerned that Russia was attempting to do that. I prayed.
Russia had put their finger on the scale.
I don't recall what I said specifically.
You can find it later, but I wrote it down.
Okay, I will.
Oh, well, he wrote it down.
And what I want to ask you,
because you know he's a stenographer,
do you think that justifies then you, Mr. McCabe, and Lisa Page to correct that wrong that you perceived was done by the FBI?
That never happened, and that would not happen.
Let me ask you the IG's report that I have right here. You said that political bias did not impact your professional actions. You said that earlier in this meeting as well. Now, let me give you a little background. In a text message sent on August 15th, and this has been discussed earlier, you wrote to Lisa Page, "I want to believe the path you threw out in Andy's office, that there is no way he gets elected, but I'm afraid we can't take that risk. It's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40.
Yes, sir.
Certainly remember that. You've heard it a lot. The reason that, was there anyone else in that meeting?
I'm sure there was. I don't remember who.
But so you don't remember who all was it?
There were inordinate number of meetings. We're the government. We have meetings. I don't remember for this particular meeting who was there.
Okay.
I could look at my notes.
But at least two of those people that were in that meeting with you are no longer working for the FBI, are they?
I don't know that Mr. McCabe was there.
You don't know that Mr. McCabe was in the office?
He was in the office. My recollection of that meeting is that we had a briefing to the director. Sometimes after briefings like that, the director will stay behind with his very senior staff, like the general counsel and the deputy. And if we have other matters to discuss that don't merit the importance of the director's time, we'll go down to the deputy's office and wait for him to return. So he may have been there. He may not have been there. I don't recall.
Well, but sir, what color was his underwear?
The FBI, is that correct?
That is correct.
How about Lisa Page?
She is not.
Anybody else that was in that meeting that you recall that no longer works at the FBI?
Possibly Mr. Baker, but I don't know if he was in the meeting or not.
Okay, let me ask.
Yeah, that's it. Possibly, I don't think Mr. Rubicki went down either.
Okay, let me ask, did you present the original FISA application?
No. So, sir, what I, When I assume you were talking about the FISA application on Carter Page that
Correct.
I had limited the ability
Correct.
To answer questions.
Correct.
I did not.
Were you in the courtroom?
No.
Okay. And
is it bigger than a bread box? Smaller than a camel?
Three renewals, correct?
Sir, I'm not certain. I can discuss that without divulging classified information, and I don't know that I've been given clearance by the FBI to discuss that.
Okay. Well, Mr. Rosenstein was here and admitted that he signed the third renewal.
I certainly defer to his statement, sir.
Good for him.
And he signed that third renewal, but amazingly to me, Mr. Strzok, because of the information that was in that renewal.
Is it just me or do the Republicans get to go on forever?
He would not admit that he actually read the document. Do you know of any falsehood, any half-truth, any misinformation that was in that third renewal that would preclude him from being able to say he read it
Sir,
and he signed it and approved it?
I have no information about the Deputy Attorney General and what he did or didn't do or why he did or did not do anything.
Okay, you said that political bias didn't affect your work, but the FBI and DOJ were both admonished for misconduct in the prosecution of Senator Ted Stevens, right?
Sir, I was not involved in that investigation. I don't
okay,
know.
Well, former Director Comey
the time of the
that,
gentleman has expired.
Oh, about
the
damn time.
Answer the question.
Okay. You know that they're undergoing training right now for political bias at the FBI, is that correct?
I understand that was a recommendation in the IG report.
The time has expired. The chair recognizes the gentleman from Alabama, Mr. Palmer, for 5 minutes.
No,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sakes. I don't look. We'll move away from this madness because, again, you know, apparently, this is such a dummied up, frauded up, faked up, rubed up, ginned up, carnival midway con job that well. Yeah, Democrats need not apply. Poor Mr. Gomez got to speak, and how many Republicans have we heard? You know, they're running 8-10 to 1. Now, is that because the Democrats aren't there? I don't know. Or is it because they're just letting the Republicans make the maggots make fools of themselves? Do you understand the insurance question? I understand the. In other words. It's a 1,000,000 to 1 long shot, but it could happen. And we need to be ready because he deals with a lot of shady characters. Remember, they already knew about Michael Flynn. Remember, George Papadopoulos had long since run his mouth with a belly full of wine to an Australian diplomat who turned around and got hold of the FBI and said, "Hi, Mike. Corbett here is not exactly a tight-lipped sort of fella. You might want to look into the black." I did the terrible Australian accent again because I've been told by Brother Deacon Asa that, unlike my Russian accent, my Australian accent's not so bad. Robert's done the same thing. By the way, we got some breaking news. This is some real Lulu stuff. Here we are, middle of July. Jared Kushner still doesn't have does not have access or the ability to have access to review sensitive information. But that's okay, because he's still doing it anyway. Rules? What rules? And Gary Palmer of Alabama is making little pointy fingers at Peter Strzok so that the people back home can see, back home in the district down to Clanton, where they grow some fabulous peaches. They grow fabulous peaches in Clanton, Alabama. They can see him pointing his tiny... making tiny little finger points at Mr. Strzok so that they can understand that he's protected. He's protecting their beloved maggot leader. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm drawn to this hearing, and I have been all day. The way that moths are drawn to flames. You know, if the flame had a Russian accent and was corrupt as hell and had no interest in, but you get the idea. But I've got to tear myself away. I got to. We just have to. We can't. I mean, this is thorn in the side stuff, without a doubt. But we got to pull ourselves, tear ourselves away. Let's run over. Let's run over to the phones a minute and check in with Silent R. Lamar. Hey, Lamar.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm here. How about you? You there?
I'm there. I'm here, sweating and farting and complaining like everything else, but I'm loving every minute of it. I have a out the side of the neck knowing what the Republicans are doing right now. Remember, back with Roosevelt, they managed to get themselves out of power for 40 years. I forgot who mentioned it in the chat room, but they're working on being out of power for another 40 years. The FBI is not the people to mess with. I don't understand these clowns, these Republicans. Do they not know that the FBI got dirt on them?
Well, I don't know, and it used to be, I would tend to agree with an assertion like you made, Lamar. Insofar that you don't want to go screwing with the FBI. However, it's a different time now. And for instance, we know that the FBI in New York City, for instance, was deeply compromised because they were leaking all over themselves to Rudy Giuliani. Remember?
Because they disliked Hillary.
Right,
but you have to understand, they don't talk about that. This gentleman, Peter
Strzok,
I can't pronounce his last
Strzok.
Name.
Strzok.
He had information on Trump and his Deutsche Bank and all this other stuff. I knew about this stuff back in 2015, but nobody talked about it. But the FBI knows about it. So I'm like this. I'm waiting for Miss Page. When they bring her up to say and punch on her, she says, you know, we have this. Why are you not talking about Trump's kidnapping of other children? You're more focused on this instead of what he's doing right now. And then if I was the FBI, I would start leaking certain things about these people, like J. Edgar Hoover. Start leaking out stuff about these people and the improprieties and the inconsistencies and their bullshit. One thing I do say, and I will give the FBI, they are American first. Their political positions are second, and their religious beliefs are with them. I can work with the FBI. I have issues with the CIA because they like to do regime change. They want to run the world. No, let other countries run their country. If you don't like them, don't work with them. That's my preference. But the FBI is the Federal Bureau of Investigation who works primarily in the United States. They know what's going on here. They know what Trump has done. They know what these Republicans have done. Let them kicking them, and they will release hell on these people. And like I've said before, they'll be out of power for 40 years or more. I'm hoping for that.
I hope you're right. But the difference between then and now is the media landscape, Lamar, and also the fact that they were not able. By operation of law, to gerrymander the country the way that it is now. Because, see, back then, and I'm not trying to make this an overly sensitive issue, but, I mean, you know the reality. Back then, wasn't hardly any black folks voting anyway.
Well, that's not the problem. The
well,
point,
but wait, no,
the
wait,
point,
wait, wait, wait.
Go ahead, go.
Wait.
Okay, go ahead, go shoot.
With the Voting Rights Act, it triggered a need inside the conservative movement to limit the effects of African-American voting. Because, once again, white terror kicked in at, you know, at warp speed, oh my God. And it became an imperative to conservatism to keep black votes from having any sort of, not significant, not big, but any sort of impact on the American political process. So they got busy and they essentially ghettoized, if I can use that term,
go for it,
the African American vote. So that's why you will have pockets of deliberately concentrated African American votes to give, you know, a member of Congress, because they have to keep up the appearance that the votes count. But meanwhile, in highly concentrated areas with large black populations, they tend to get watered down in a place like Texas or Alabama, with a bizarrely drawn district that pulls in enough white folks to make sure that they can never affect the outcome. And so, yeah, FDR put, but it wasn't 40 years. FDR and Harry Truman after him had about 20 years, and then lo and behold, there's what did he call it? Harry Truman called it the do nothing 100th Congress. Harry Truman
True.
Couldn't. Harry Truman. So there was no 40 years in the wilderness.
No, it was that. What I'm talking about is after them, because the Republicans were not in control until after Clinton was elected.
Oh no, no.
The first
okay.
time they got
right. Yeah, the 1994 midterms brought in a Republican majority under Newt Gingrich.
Right. They were not in control until then. And just like they did in 37, 29, they're doing the same stuff. As a black man, I'm laughing at the white people who are so dead heat on hurting Negroes. Because the problem is, to hurt me, you must shoot yourself in the foot. America is a socialist country. Like it or not, we're socialists. And people are playing it, especially these politicians, are playing it. If they were to remove the black vote and remove Roe v. Wade, if they were to get rid of that and eliminate all minority voters, who are they going to point to? Because when white people realize they've been treating like slaves and third-class citizens, that's when the shit hits the fan. The black movement, civil rights didn't jump off until they started showing white people getting slapped down out there marching for civil rights and equal rights and human rights for Negroes. Am I lying? Am I wrong? Am I deluded in my thinking?
I won't say that you're deluded. I mean, since Emmett Till came into the conversation today, the murder of Emmett Till catalyzed the movement. At least, my understanding of history, and it was a movement that was already in progress. But the murder of Emmett Till lit a fire. And then,
yes, but go ahead.
And yes, the nation was shocked by that, and shocked again with the murders of the three civil rights activists who were buried in Neshoba County, Mississippi, in an earthen dam.
Right.
And a white woman named Viola Liuzzo was gunned down on a road in the middle of nowhere in Alabama, in conjunction with the civil rights efforts in Dallas County, Selma, without a doubt.
Right, right. And the point that you're touching on right now is it's okay to shoot minorities for standing up for their rights, but you shall not shoot a white person for standing up for the rights of others. That's where the line is drawn at. That's where most of the battles are taking over. When white people start standing up for righteousness and humanity for other humans, that's where the conflict comes in.
Well, I think there's an element of truth in that, and it runs parallel, Lamar, with the understood almost law of revolution that says that revolution, you know, poverty revolutions always fail. Revolutions only succeed when you get the middle class, the bourgeoisie, involved.
There you go. The bourgeoisie is the problem.
And so when you and so when you've got activist white folks coming down from up north, I mean the word outside agitators was invented for them. George Wallace, Lester Maddox. We don't need no outside agitators coming in here stirring up our
Negroes.
There you
go. Yeah. There you go. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Sure.
It's a real simple thing. And I just see right now, I posted on the chat room that I don't want Sessions and this group under Trump investigating Emmett Till, because what it's going to be is a whitewash, a change of history, a correction American history.
Yeah, I had my tongue halfway in my cheek, but yeah. It'll be, you know, none of this wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for that lying woman.
But see, right now, if they were to bring that statement up, then why is it so many white people, scared of other white people calling the police and using the police with the fact that the police may gun that minority down if you call them, like the gentleman who was sitting in his pool. Why should I rent from you if I'm going to get arrested sitting at the pool that I'm paying $1,600 for? Why should I come to your store and spend my money at your store when I can get gunned down for coming in and asking for an extra piece of sugar? Okay, you know, I mean, people need to start thinking about this stuff. You want our money, but you don't want us. The hell with that.
Yeah, and if you want to go back and read it, I'm sure probably you already have. Go back and read Booker T. Washington's address to the Atlanta Exposition in 1890, whatever it was. Yeah, he says something similar. We will either all rise together, or we will be a millstone around white America's neck.
Well, I like that part, the millstone around white America's neck, because that's what we are. Because like Frederick Douglass said, why did you invite me to the 4th of July? That has nothing to do with me and my people. It's all about the 19th of July.
June 16th,
one of those.
Juneteenth.
Yeah, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, the day that emancipation was declared in Texas.
Yeah, I'm like this. I've had a hell of a week, man. I have a hell of a day. I finally got another bank account for my business. My daughter's got her car windshield crashed. Then my son got hit. Like I was saying, I feel like King Kong with airplanes.
Is your son okay?
Oh, everything was fine. Nobody was hurt. Tedious bullshit, temperamental shit. I mean,
scare the hell out of mama and daddy.
Yeah. I told my son with his car, I said, be prepared. They're going to tell you your car is total. I'll get you a new door.
Oh, God almighty.
Well, it's just a racket.
No, I mean, there's just some days when all you can do is walk around and go, what a fucking day. Because you can't believe they can pack that much shit, the bad shit, into one day.
Like I said earlier, I think it was yesterday or the day before, my office, for some reason, is extremely hot. I bought an air conditioner. It just tells me the temperature, but it's not cooling the damn place. I got, like I say, some people got hot pockets. I got hot puppies in me, okay?
Yeah. Hey, let me throw one more idea your way. You tell me if I'm crazy.
Okay, shoot me. Shoot.
You mentioned the Emmett Till business.
Yeah.
We all know that Julius Geezer and his regime enjoy, if enjoy is the word, an approval rating in the African-American community that is somewhere near absolute freezing. Yeah, low. So today we get this announcement from United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, and they say, while we've received new information in the case, but well, we can't tell you nothing about it, but we've reactivated the investigation. Well, that's nothing more than a tease, Lamar, okay? So this is actually designed from, you know, because I got my little paranoid maggot hat on.
Okay.
This is designed to get the black community, primarily, to look away from all the corruption and all the filth and all the Russian shenanigans and all the racism that is inherent in the very being of Donald J. Trump. So that, look here. Granted, the young man's been dead for a whole lot of years.
61 years.
But we're gonna reopen that investigation because he deserves justice. That's right. I mean, you can hear it coming
out. For myself
out,
right now. I speak for myself.
Yeah, but I mean, you can hear it coming out of Sessions' mouth, and you can hear and you can well imagine the cold, raw political calculation that went into it. Well, we're going to make them think we care about black people.
Oh no, I'm going to elaborate on that, but I had to get my personal opinion out first. I'm talking about me before I represent other people who might think like me. Yes, I am African American, and what he just told me is telling me, yes, Mr. Sessions, sir, can I have another pile of poop on my ice cream? Can I get another scoop of that cow poop on my ice cream, please? That's what he's saying to me. And what they're playing on are the millennial Negroes who have not been educated due to Mr. Reagan's low information program. This is how they're trying to get over. But see, one thing about low information, I'll say it, I said it before, I'll say it again. When the last time you seen two professors having a fist fight?
Yeah, it doesn't really happen a lot, does it?
Right, but you get two third grade individuals, I don't care if they're 65 years old, you're going to have a fist fight.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen is the white population, you know who I'm scared for right now? I'm going to say this right now. I'm not scared for Negroes. I'm scared for white people because there's going to be a lot of white people who are going to get hurt and dead. When you guys talk about how your fears and all this other, I understand that because you guys are going to take the blunt of something that you haven't taken in a long time. This idiot over here talking about Trump. Okay, you have to understand, Trump had people do his education for him. He has no idea about NATO. I was born in 58, 16 years after World War II. I understand duck and cover. My father served in the Korean War. This idiot's up here talking, and he doesn't understand that I and other Negroes like me talk to our children. It is the millennials. I'm fighting with my children to treat their kids like I treated them. Talk to them. Explain to them. My son tells me, Dad, all the knowledge you give me, I love it. He sees them coming prior to them opening their mouth. Makes him a better person and a more successful American. And if a politician come up to me and tell me he's a Christian and he's a Republican, I'm like, you know what? I want to talk to you because I am from the ilk of I am an American first. I am a Democrat. And my religious belief is between me. We as a country must take care of the country. We must be Americans first. Hell with the color. We're all Americans. And then you're going to sit there, Bush gives these people, okay, all you immigrants, if you go here and fight this war, I'll let you be a citizen. And then Trump comes and says, all you people who fought this war, get the fuck out of my country. It's just like what they did to the Indians.
We got a history. We got a history, Lamar. There's no getting around it.
Yes, white man speak with forked tongue. I'm not talking about you.
Don't I know that. Wrong. I know that. I know that. I didn't think you were.
I'm like this. You cannot judge a man until he exposes himself to you. Like, you know, I am a militant. But I can't hate black people. I can't hate white people. I can't hate nobody. But I can hate you once you show me your hand. I for damn sure can turn my venom. Oh, damn, I have a speech impediment problems. Okay.
You're doing fine.
My venom toward you. But I must allow you to show your hand. This is what I teach my children. I have 5 kids, 3 girls and 2 boys. And I teach them, do not judge until they show their hand. And once they show their hand, evaluate that hand. Because prejudgment or jump to a conclusion might be in your worst interest. Because you don't know what the condition was that made them do that at that time. We do not have the luxury of being prejudiced. Everybody is racist. Blacks are racist. Chinese are racist. Everybody's racist. You have Negroes who don't like dark-skinned Negroes. You got Negroes who don't like light-skinned Negroes. I mean, it's everywhere. You got white people.
Everyone has some degree of bias. It's almost inescapable. It's, I guess, human, or it's ingrained in us since the days that we gave up hunting and gathering and started, you know, farming and then trade, and then we're interacting with people we've never seen before.
That's true. One thing about humans, the fear of something different is a monster. When I was growing up, when I was in high school, that was back in between 73 and 76, I was so scared for any aliens to land on the United States or come into this atmosphere, because the first thing I know America would do is attack. And once they realize they can't kill you, then they want to be your friend. I'm like, shit, dude. You just attacked me and I slapped you down. Now you want to be my friend? Bullshit. Vaporize your ass and go on about my business, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's sad, but you know, that's where we're at right now. Trump has unleashed the evil in America that has been squashed. Those who were not normally evil are feeling happy to vent. And since we do not give venting exercises for people like China and the rest of these places, the anger, the animosity, everything has built up to a point where we're boiling over. All I ask is for cooler heads. And I know right now the cooler heads is the FBI, because they're going to do a clean house, because Louis Gohmert, who led the Hillary investigation, if I had been the gentleman.
You mean King Crablegs?
Oh, yeah. If I had been sitting there, sir, I would say, excuse me, sir, you're accusing me of being biased toward Mr. Trump. Were you not biased against Ms. Hillary when you took 8 years or 6 years of investigation of her email accounts in Benghazi? Sir, may I ask, who was indicted? Got to shut that shit all down. They're being respectful. The FBI is going to stop being respectful in a few minutes. You can only kick a dog so many times before they bite your ass, okay?
Did it ever occur to you that the reason that that a guy who's up to his eyebrows in dirty Russian banking got confirmed as the head of the criminal division of the DOJ yesterday?
Wait.
If Rosenstein should step down or get on the wrong airplane or something like that, that's the guy who gets to fire Mueller.
You know what? I'm going to be truthful with you. This is just me speaking. Let them fire Mueller. Because then Pandora's box will open up. These people who are in there right now who have gotten control don't know how to run nothing and do not know how the pecking order works. They get rid of Mueller after what they have done and all this other stuff. Oh, man, the one thing I give them credit for, the Republican and
hey,
the
Lamar, stand, elite. Lamar, stand by for a second. Representative sure Sheila Jackson Lee is finally getting to talk. It's a miracle.
Oh, yeah, I heard her earlier. Go, girl.
During 9/11 and certainly in the aftermath of the investigation, let me thank the FBI and Mr. Strzok for their service. Let me quickly say this and then conclude my remarks. I want it to be clear that General Flynn, in his offense, asked the Russian ambassador to refrain from escalating the situation in response to sanctions that the United States had imposed against Russia. Following, a whistleblower then said that he referred this to Mr. Flynn, that the sanctions would be, quote, ripped up to allow money to start flowing to one of Flynn's business projects. Did you have anything to do with any comments by General Flynn?
This is not for asking questions, Ms. Jackson.
I will leave that on the record, Mr. Chairman. Right. I thought that it would be good to clarify it because I've asked others, but let me finish my remarks. In the concluding comments, Mr. Strzok, again, I believe this hearing in its long period of time showed no bias in the decisions regarding the final report on Hillary Clinton's emails. She was vindicated. Nothing changes the Russian interference in our elections of 2016. Unfortunately, no questions were asked by the Republicans about the Russian interference. And the GOP, in many instances, would not let you, Mr. Strzok, answer the questions. Finally, the hearing did not give the American people, I think, the important answers that they needed. And that is, how will we secure our elections in 2018? That, unfortunately, plays into Putin's hands. It also did not respond or did not answer, what do you do when White House officials have not gotten their own security clearance? And finally, let me be very clear. When our country is attacked, I want to make sure that the FBI and not the KGB shows up. We need to do a better job of answering the concerns of children that have been snatched away from their parents, the violation of voting rights, the need to end gun violence, and many other issues. But today you stood the test of time, at least. You've admitted fault and certainly admitted that you would have wanted to do things in a better way, as I've gleaned from your testimony. But it cannot take away your service in the United States military, your service to the FBI, and your willingness to offer, if you will, your deference and your concern about the continuation of the FBI and its service to this nation. Mr. Chairman, I hope that the Judiciary Committee and Oversight Chairman, I believe, is not present, but in any event, that we will take up the issues that the American people desire and that we will solve problems of which are important to the democracy, security, and the values of this nation. I thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I yield back.
And you know what, Senator Lamar, I'll point out one thing. The only way that what she just suggested happens is if these no good, corrupt, bought and paid for maggot congressmen are sent packing in November. That's the only way that happens.
Like I say, the only way that's going to happen, A, everybody has to go out and vote, but the people, we need Republicans to want to be Americans first and not Republicans first. Because if we can get those people to be Americans first and not Republicans first, we can get rid of these people. As long as they're Republicans first, they will never get rid of this illness that we have. And like she was saying, they got rid of Al Franken because Al Franken was the only white person who questioned, like, Ms. He was a goddamn comedian. What the hell is a comedian asking harder questions than lawyers who have degrees from Yale and all these other places? That's a sore sell time. That is a given sign that they are bought and sold. And right now, like you have said before, all the Trump voters are now being punished because they elected a businessman who had 6 bankruptcies and who could not get a loan in the United States as their president. And now they're wondering why their business is going underwater. Duh.
Yep. Well, I think you've said it very well, Senator Lamar. We got folks wanting to, add to your remarks. So, thank you very kindly.
Oh,
and again,
thank you for taking my call,
brother.
Oh,
no, no, thank you for making it. And just remember, tell your son and your daughter, there are going to be days like this, and you just got to get through to the next one.
Man, they want to be like me. I'm Mikey. They want to be like Mike.
And you know what? They're lucky to have somebody like you, and your grandkids are.
Oh yeah,
to show them, to show them the way, Silent R. Lamar.
Oh, I got to. I'm like this. My grandparents showed me the way, so I'm doing it for mine.
There we go. Transgenerational wisdom. There is no better. Silent R. Lamar, you have a good evening, my friend. And
you
thanks,
too, buddy.
And thanks for your help this week. Thank you so much.
Oh, anytime I can, brother.
All right, thank you now. Bye.
Bye.
That's our buddy, Silent R. Lamar. I'm going, we'll go back to the phones. The call's been rolling in, but a note just came in from Darlene in Connecticut, and thank you very kindly to Darlene, who responded to Robert's Australian challenge and took us down to $390 to go in fundraising for the evening. And then thank you to Charlene in Rhode Island. That takes us down to $365 to go, and I really hate I really hate this new Skype interface. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Darlene. And maybe we can knock it on down and, you know, do 2 days worth of fundraising that we've missed out on. We're $165 away from being able to do that, $365 from being caught up. So that tomorrow, and by the way, a reminder: tomorrow is a truncated version of Friday on the Front Porch. And we won't. We'll start Friday on the Front Porch almost at right out of the blocks at 6 p.m. Eastern, and then I'll have to sign off at 8 o'clock because I'll be filling in for Malloy at 9. Okay. Meanwhile, let's keep the calls in California. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bubba.
Hey, what's happening?
How are you?
I'm good.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was a bit laid up for a couple of days.
You know, I kind of guessed that. I was a little bit worried about you.
Well, let me tell you what happened. I'll give you the short version.
The Jim Baker bucket coffee, did you?
Well, you need to go to the racetrack. You're rather psychic today. one of my religious friends one of the few remaining religious friends, decided that I would be the perfect candidate for some of his new bucket coffee. So a bucket arrived. Now, I know I'm pretty sure you've seen enough Breaking Bad to get the reference that I'm going to make.
Okay.
After my sluices opened at both ends, so to speak, as a result of ingesting this bucket coffee, I got my little portable black light and ran it over the top of the container. And wouldn't you know, there was a black light visible only stamp of a star indicating that was the batch for a lefty. And I'm not saying Jim did it. I'm not saying my friend did it. But didn't agree with me at all. So I was bent over halfway.
Are you going back to the Taster's Choice freeze-dried? It's very good.
Is that what I drink? Yeah, I guess whatever it is that I drink, that's what I'll drink. So, no, actually, I'll tell you exactly what happened. I'm into my summertime sleeping mode, and that is when it gets so hot in the daytime, I am up during the cooler hours, and I'm sleeping during the warmer hours. And unfortunately,
well, that's an old Bedouin trick.
Yeah, well,
I learned that watching Lawrence of Arabia.
Well, there you go. And the thing is, those hours don't coincide with the start and end of the program. I've been catching it on replay, but I haven't been able to get in live until today. So here I am.
I understand, you know, but I did. I learned that watching that old Bedouin Omar Sharif say, "Now we travel by night. It is too hot in the day."
Yeah.
Yes. The old exactly. Bedouin, that old Bedouin Omar Sharif. Yes.
Exactly. where to go?
Among other things, Scott, there's actually a little bit of breaking news out. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to take a run at this real quick.
You know
that the 70-year-old toddler is in the Sceptred Isle, you know, England, the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Against the howls of protest of decent Britons everywhere and decent Scots persons and Irish persons and Welsh persons, they decided to let him into the country anyway, even though if they had even nominally applied their laws against proponents of hate speech entering the UK, he never would have been allowed. And so Theresa May and her husband met Julius Geezer and his wife, the first lady ever to remove her clothes for a stranger in exchange for money. And he sat down for an interview with the UK paper The Sun. It was published today. And in it, fresh off his triumph at NATO, he did everything he could to squirrel the effort to deal with Brexit, which, you know, frankly, the UK is not doing a real good job of anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They had to get rid of Boris Johnson as foreign minister, among other things.
Well, let me interject very quickly. That whole Brexit deal was screwed up to begin with. Because of...
Well, it was Russianed up.
Well, the voters were misinformed, or they fell into a trap that a lot of American voters did here in 2016. Oh, it'll never happen. So we'll find something else to do to occupy our time when we should be out there fucking voting. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, I agree. Here's what happened. He gives this interview, and he declares in the interview that if the recently published so-called soft Brexit plan goes through, then he will squirrel the deal for a U.S.-UK free trade agreement. And this, of course, has, from what I can tell, thrown the May government into chaos. He said, if they do a deal like that, we would be dealing with the European Union instead of dealing with the UK, so it'll probably kill the deal. If they do that, then their trade deal with the US will probably not be made. And, well, he may have just gone to the UK and put a shiv between the ribs of Theresa May. Now, I'm not going to shed a bunch of tears for her. But the fact of the matter is, it does not inure to any good for anybody in the UK to have an adversarial relationship with the continent. It's a lot closer to Europe than it is to the United States, as in point of fact. And frankly, how the UK handles trade with the EU is much more important to the UK than how the UK handles trade with the United States. I mean, frankly, we trade with them, but, you know, not near as much as they trade with the EU.
Well, and it could be that Trump's handlers or manipulators or puppet masters are trying to orchestrate. See, the Great Britain has a parliamentary government, and new elections can be called when the need arises, unlike in this country, where you're stuck with whoever you foolishly let be elected, you know, for 4 years in the case of the president, or 6 years in the case of the senators, or 2 years in the case of the House of Representative members. So it could well be that they're trying to help destabilize Theresa May toward the end of getting in someone along the line of Thatcher, or who followed her? Was it John Major?
That sounds right.
You know, it's strange that someone, well, it's not strange at all. It's predictable. Trump isn't even playing the Chinese checkers or pickup sticks, while people like Putin and other enemies of our country, or adversaries of our country / enemies, they're playing high-level, three-dimensional Star Trek chess, you know? So it's no wonder we're getting fucked over to a fare-thee-well, because you've got an irretrievably stupid, totally ill-qualified person as president, with enablers in this country, in the House and the Senate, obviously, and in governorships, and even in the Democratic Party, if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly about people like Joe Manchin. And it was so easily avoidable. And Silent R, and you were talking about the Emmett Till case. I think it's on Netflix. Anybody who has Netflix needs to look at a Dave Chappelle program from maybe a year ago, thereabouts. And I can't remember which one it was, what the exact title was. But he does a little segment in a stand-up routine about the good news, or the bad news / good news aspect of Emmett Till's murder so many years ago. And if you have Netflix and can find that segment by Dave Chappelle, I urge you to listen to it and look at it. And then once you listen to it and look at it, listen to it and look at it again, Because the gist of what he's saying is, as horrible and tragic and unsettling as Emmett Till's murder was, it kicked people into action in such a way as to basically end up with such gains as were possible to be made in the civil rights movement, and really did shift things, or at least shifted them enough to where Black people were not disadvantaged in the same ways as they were before. Now, a lot of that has been eroded and is at risk to this day, which is why lessons must always be retaught and relearned. And then that's my little history lecture segment for today.
Yeah.
But and I don't know if you saw this on the Horn Facebook. I was trying to get a sense of the party affiliation of people in this country in our present day. And I happened upon a chart, a link from the Gallup organization that lays it out year by year, going back some number of years. But the second chart at the link was most appropriate and relevant because a question put specifically to independents, that is, who do you align with or who resonates you more, the Republican Party or the Democratic Party? And the results were something like, oh, I don't have the link right here in front of me, but it was pretty damned impressive that among the independents who were posed, who had that question posed to them in this upcoming election, they are favoring the Democratic approach and mindset a hell of a lot more than they are the Republican. So that may be some tea leaves that we need to keep in mind for the next several months ahead and these midterms. Because to the extent that we can throw a wrench into the GOP the favor, and if we can't undo the results of 2016, we need to do as much as we can to slow them down. Because I'm not entirely sure, even if the Democrats win and retake the House and Senate in 2020, they'll probably retake the House in 2018. But even if they retake the House, the Senate, and the presidency in 2020, there may be enough cracks in the dam that undoing the damage. Hell, I was telling my older brother the other day, we're still undoing the horrific things that were wrought by Reagan and Daddy Bush in the 80s. So, I mean, if we're still cleaning up that mess all these years later, imagine how much extra work we have ahead of us in repairing and cleaning up after this crew. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to filibuster here.
No, you're doing fine.
It's been on my mind and my heart to talk all religiously in these months since the election. And the stakes are so high that we cannot afford to stay home. We've got to behave in a manner that's consistent with putting the brakes on with these people, because they will not stop on their own. There's nothing in their playbook that includes responsible behavior on the part of these people. They it's like the old saying, a stiff prick has no conscience. Well, an elected Republican has no conscience.
Well, that's the truth. And look, you mentioned responsibility. the story coming out of London right now, and by the way, thousands took to the streets, Scott, in objection to this sick freak being in being even on their soil.
Yeah.
And good for them. I mean, if I was over there, I'd make sure I had me a T-shirt that said, "I hate him too. I'm an American. I hate him too." But in terms of irresponsibility and things that presidents of the United States don't do, you know, I mentioned that Boris Johnson bailed out on her cabinet. Bailed. Yeah, we're not sure if he was pushed or if he jumped.
Mm-hmm.
Probably needed. I mean, he's a hardcore so-called Brexiter. That means he's a tool. And now, lo and behold, Julius Geezer has declared that Boris Johnson would make a great prime minister. And then he went on to attack the mayor of London, whom he's attacked before, Sadiq Khan. He's done a very bad job on terrorism because he's, quote-unquote, allowing migrants to come to the city. I guess, you know, what they need is a big, beautiful wall around London. You idiot, they used to have one. They don't work. But he's doing nothing but committing mayhem over there. He said, "I actually told Theresa May how to do the Brexit, but she didn't agree. She didn't listen to me. She wanted to go a different route." Holy shit, Scott! There are no norms of behavior with this guy. He's gone. He said, "We have enough difficulty with the European Union. We're cracking down right now on the European Union because they haven't treated the United States fairly on trading." Horse shit.
And you know, Bob,
I mean, can you find any possible explanation for this? You know, I'm sure you've got a nice edge on your Occam's razor. Other than, can you find any explanation for this other than the fact that he is a Russian asset doing the business of Vladimir Putin?
No, there's no other explanation for it, and that's what I was going to mention. And I concur with Lamar on this. We need another period, long period of time, when the GOP has no access at all, meaningful access to the levers of power in this country. I mean, you look back at Roosevelt was elected in 32 and began serving in 33, and there wasn't another Republican president after Herbert Hoover until 52 when Eisenhower was elected.
Yeah, 20 year span.
You know, and then there's the business of the GOP. I think Truman's first Congress was Republican. Mostly Republican controlled, if not both houses.
The do nothing 100th Congress.
But then after that, we went from whenever that was to 94, wasn't it? Until the Republicans took over the House. And we've seen over the last, 30 years, 25 years, what a clusterfuck that's been with only one or two respites. For one respite, back when Obama was president, the Republicans held mercifully and miraculously both houses of Congress for a while. But by that time, and you're right about the media landscape being different now than it was, say, during Watergate or during the 60s or the 50s. I would be willing to bet you $100 that I would have to raise that the newspaper that you mentioned, that Trump was interviewed in.
The Sun.
In Britain, the Sun, is one of Rupert's.
Pretty sure it is.
Fish wraps.
Pretty sure it is, yeah.
You know, I wouldn't even wrap dead fish in it. And if Punky were still around, I wouldn't put it on the bottom of his cage for fear of contaminating him. You know? We have just got to latch on to the reality here, people, that we have got to just have... It's like... It's almost like the Knights of the Round Table, and that's a bad metaphor to use, but to be so focused and committed to something that only death will stop you from seeing your way through. We've got to have a laser-like focus and behavior to match it between now and however far into the future as you wish to look. Otherwise, we are literally all screwed, Bob. And I mean that in a big, big way.
That's the existential all screwed, Bob. We're all existentially screwed, Bob.
Yeah. And I don't know.
I hate it when news like this breaks during the program. Because I'm all prepared for other stuff. I mean, I got a baseball story, sorta. But you need when one of these moments of madness occurs, you need a couple of minutes and about a half a fifth tequila to process it, to sort of take it in, if necessary, let your mind form a sort of a defense mechanism against it or what. But you need a minute to just say to yourself, I'm living in 2018, and the President of the United States just tried to topple the British government. Now, good, bad, or indifferent, I mean, We've had British governments we do like, British governments we don't like. I mean, I think if Ronald Reagan could have gotten Maggie Thatcher to toss his salad, it would have been the most wonderful thing that ever happened, or vice versa. And the so-called special relationship, and there's such a complicated relationship between the United States and Great Britain. Going all the way back to John Adams. John Adams would have gladly stuck his nose right up George III's hindquarters. Whereas Jefferson and Franklin were far more in line with the French. And we had treaty obligations with the French. Dr. Bill's really good on this one. We had treaty obligations with the French that we abrogated. Because of the Anglophilia of certain, you know, conservative elements in the country. Alexander Hamilton proposed the idea of not a presidency, but a fucking monarch. And down through history, like I said, the relationship has been strained from time to time. In the Civil War, it was strained. And Churchill, out at my old alma mater, threw the British government and Europe and the world into chaos with his Iron Curtain speech, because his dear old pal Harry had invited him to talk at Westminster College. But through it all, we've had an understanding that we would not take pot shots at each other's government. Now, I don't know what's going to happen when he meets the coin and he goes up and tries to shake her hand so hard that he crushes her dry and brittle old bones. But the fact of the matter is, this is not, I mean, when I say, Scott, this is not done, You know, I don't mean using the wrong fork with the fucking shrimp. I mean a fundamental breakdown of whatever it is that we used to think American diplomacy was. It doesn't exist. There, like I said, there are no norms anymore. Norm's gone. We got nothing but Cliff Clavin anymore.
Well, that actually is more of a compliment to what's going on than an insult, because Cliff Clavin did have a pearl of wisdom every now and again, even though that wasn't...
Yeah, and he also had an extra molar that proved he was the true heir to the Romanov dynasty. But, I mean, you know, what do you want?
Well, you know, you can't really fall back on diplomacy, Bob. I mean, thanks to the Exxon man.
The Exxon guy got fired by the guy who sold meat through the mail. I'm sorry, that's just stuck on a brain cell, and it's never going away.
Well, not only that, but critical positions and jobs in our State Department, which wasn't the State Department the first cabinet level office to be arranged and organized.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson was the first Secretary of State, wasn't he? That was how Washington got him off the North American continent, because otherwise he was going to make terrible trouble.
But the point is, that was the first cabinet level office to be organized at the foundation of the country.
With a budget of $300.
Why was that? And you look over through history at the importance of having a professional, capable, diplomatic corps.
And we've never, and
here
we've,
and abroad.
And the fact of the matter is, Dr. Bill went into it a long, long time ago. You'd have to dig deep through the archives. But the United States has never been particularly good at diplomacy. Not the way the French are and the British are. But the reason we had to organize our diplomatic corps first, Scott, was because we couldn't fight a war. The French won the revolution for us.
But in the years since, even though it has had a checkered reputation and skill set, we at least acknowledge as a nation the importance of diplomacy in our overall plan. So you've got Trump and company. Oh, fuck diplomacy. What is that? Requires too much of you. It requires knowing something, first of all, in the way of history and current events. And it requires a commitment on your part to not blow the fucking world up, metaphorically or realistically. I mean, come on. God, I didn't mean to get worked up here today, but I can't be the only one who sees the urgency here. I know you do. I know the Horn listeners do. I know that a lot of people just out there trying to keep body and soul together do. But I hope to God, or anyone who's listening in the great beyond, will not. Now is not the time to lose heart or to say it's too big a job, we can't do it. We have got to do it.
Now is the time to say that if we do not put everything we have into doing this, we won't get a second chance.
We've got to have the same commitment, and to the extent that it's possible, lack of fear and trembling as it took for have you ever read Stride Toward Freedom, the Martin Luther King's book about the bus boycott in Montgomery?
I admit I have not. No.
All right. That when I read it, I think as a freshman in high school thereabouts, it has stuck with me to this day. Those people saw the injustice, and they saw that maybe they could do something to undo at least that. And they did it. And it took them over a year, as I recall, of walking everywhere they went, or carpooling where that was possible. And there were, I'm sure, injunctions and other ways that they were, where others opposing them tried to stymie what they were up to. But we've got to have the same level of "we must" as Rosa Parks did when she sat down on the bus.
I will add, although, I will add to that, Scott, because I'm a little ray from sunshine, that there is an incorrect assumption in this country that Rosa Parks just sat down because her feet were sore. She had been trained for that moment. She had been taught for that moment. She had been readied for that moment by the Highlander School in East Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if anything, we need the Rosa Parks attitude, but I'm afraid that in large part we don't have the Rosa Parks education.
No, we don't. Here I'm imploring people to emulate the depth and breadth of commitment. But see, all of that's got to be based on something. And like you say, a lot of it has to do with training and education. Because you don't just do that.
Right, and having an infrastructure in place behind you, ready to go bail, ready to hire lawyers, ready to litigate, activists on the ground, who then put forward and executed the Montgomery bus boycott.
In terms of electoral politics, Bob, I wonder if we've missed our chance already for 2018. And the reason I say that is, so many people are in the mindset of November getting here, and they will vote on the choices presented to them on their ballots around the country. That's not the time to become engaged. The time to become engaged is immediately after the last election, setting down the groundwork, the spade work, if you will, and the planning, so that you impact what the choices are, the options are, that people will be choosing from come November 2 years hence.
Well, at the risk of sounding like a dime store Yoda, there is no become. There is only engaged and not engaged. It's like something,
right.
It's like something Boss Man Wayne said a long time ago. Republicans don't take time off. Republicans don't take a year off. Republicans are working.
Hell no.
Republicans are working on the next campaign before the campaign before that even starts. And I wish to God for all that he is alleged and accused of fomenting and supporting, I wish George Soros was doing half of it. Or other limousine liberals.
The Republicans took a page out of the former Soviet Union's book. They have 5-year plans, hell, 10-year plans probably. They don't fuck around because they know what's at stake, and they behave accordingly, according to their running lights, the lights that they see by, supposedly. And we need to take. And there was a time when liberals had nothing to be ashamed of, and were effective in this country, because the mindset of people generally was geared toward fairness.
But the infrastructure that enabled that, Scott, if I may, has been systematically torn down. Look, the Janus decision from the Supreme Court that has so thoroughly worked up Dr. Bill. is a big part of it.
That's the one with the public union.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It completely ignored the precedent set in Abood. You know, by the Roberts Court, old balls and strikes Roberts. Bullshit. But it was all dismantled. Because, again, the Republicans understood, beginning with the Powell memo in 1972, and the rise of direct mail under, who was it, Richard Viguerie?
Yeah.
In 1968, all in the aftermath of the bloodbath of 1964, they understood that they could never win in a fair fight. So everything the Republicans have done has been geared toward making the fight more unfair. So with the Powell memo in 1972, you get a roadmap for pumping almost unlimited amounts of money into political operations. And then the assault on things like on things like social programs means that liberal monies get pumped into, instead of getting pumped into maintaining the political status quo, liberal monies get pumped into things like supporting people that the government had decided it didn't want to support anymore because Republicans were worried about them crab legs. And there's a through line that runs up to Citizens United, at which point it became okay to just openly buy members of Congress. To this point in time.
Wasn't that decision that was handed down, did not that address a question that wasn't actually raised or posed?
You can say that.
Just as Janice did? And didn't Janice do that just now?
Well, Janice was dirty because the court had already heard the case and wound up in a 4-4 tie. So then these people who despise unions got to come back and get a second bite of the apple once they got Gorsuch on the court.
And Gorsuch was only put on the court because of Mitch Fuckface Mitch Turtleman, I can't even say that he slow walked.
Well, no, it's interesting. I love the way the synchronicity works in the Horn Family Community Congregation, because at the same time you said Mitch McConnell, and before the internet latency could catch up, I had gotten a note from Ron in Raleigh, subject line, Addison McConnell. Mitch's autobiography is titled The Long Game.
There you go.
They play a long game. You got to have a bench to play a long game. And we're hurting for bench all over the place. And it's just,
well,
a fact. By the way, we have a grammatical update courtesy of Bill in Allentown, who said, tell Scott that when he does it, it's not a filibobster.
Okay.
It's a philiscotster.
Well, there you go. But my whole point was, I don't want to come across like the guy who's, Henny Penny running around saying the sky is falling. You know me, I don't really overreact.
When you have to climb over hunks of sky laying on the ground, you're not Henny Penny anymore. You're a fucking realist.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm getting at. It's like, I wouldn't be tugging at everybody's collective sleeve if it weren't vital that attention. What did Willie Loman say?
Attention must be paid. Mrs. Loman, actually.
It's this heat, I'm telling you.
Well, I mean, if you'd get out of the damn microwave, I think you'd be a little better off. I heard you just turn it on.
Well, yeah, I'm nuking up a little water to make myself another cup of my old cheapo coffee because I've got stuff to do.
The answer is because it's what tastes good to you.
It's what?
It's what tastes good to you. Yeah.
Well, it's.
I mean. I'm the one that gets smart ass emails every time I mention my decaf.
Yeah, I never could understand decaf, Bob. I mean,
oh,
I
you, et, oh, et tu, Scotte? I mean, Jesus.
I understand the need of it, but I just, it's like.
Your first cup of, look, when you're a kid, your first taste of coffee tastes like shit. It's the same with beer. But after a while, your taste buds go, hey, there's actually something good about that. It's like wine. Well, you know, your first, when you're a kid, you know, when you're young, your first taste of wine is like, eh, I'll stick with the Welch's. I like grape juice that tastes like grape juice. But the left a little bit, you know, your taste buds are like, hey, there's a lot of stuff going on here that didn't happen in the Welch's.
Well, let me tell you about my first taste of coffee, if I may. I forget how old I was, maybe junior high school or something, trying to act all grown-uppy. And my folks were fans of Louisiane coffee, which was made in New Orleans. And it contained an ingredient called chicory.
Damn right it does.
And it added a flavor to the coffee, which to me was unlike any other coffee. And I never really cared for it. As soon as I got grown up and all and could make my own purchases. I mean, I used to brew pots of coffee back in the day. And I don't know why I stopped. I don't know.
Well,
maybe
I can tell you,
kind of...
we've got a Keurig because it's just wasteful to make, you know, entire pots of coffee and then you dump out a half a pot and I'm decaf and Agnes is full strength and everything. So we got one of the little adapter hickeys and you dump the coffee in the little adapter hickey and so you're not getting beaten to death on the cups. But she also gifted me not long back. I think she found it over at Big Lots or something. What Big Lots was doing with a French press coffee carafe, I don't know. But she gave it to me. It was like $5 or something. And you can't get K cups of decaf Louisiane, but you can get it in a can. And so I'm thinking it may be time to lay hands on a can of Louisiane decaf with chicory. And I'll bet in the French press coffee maker, it's going to be some kind of fan-freaking-tastic.
I don't believe I've seen Louisiane coffee since I don't think they had it in Kansas City, at least when I lived there.
Oddly enough, the full-strength stuff I can get here.
Yeah.
Even up to the Wiggling Pig, I can get it.
See, there are certain brands that are regional. Oh, listen, and I know time's running short, and I don't want to bogart the call. Could you connect me, please, with the customer inquiries department?
Oh, stand by, please.
Okay.
yes, customer service?
Oh, thanks. I didn't want to press one, because I only speak this language.
Well, that's part of our customer service. No waiting.
Oh, good, good. I appreciate that. And you may have addressed this, sir or madam, at some point this week. Pardon me.
Jesus, we're turning into a regular Bob and Ray.
Yeah.
But I may have addressed this.
What is the... I sent you something, and I'm curious to know whether you got it.
I do have it.
And I even sent... You do have it.
Yes.
Good. Okay. All right. I just wanted to verify that because I got all hinky there because I either didn't hear it or
no, I hadn't.
Somehow.
I haven't because I have to get... It's a near 100-mile round trip to Beckley and back.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you're done fooling around the traffic in traffic in Beckley is... I think traffic in Beckley is probably worse than traffic in Atlanta or L.A. Don't ask. But I have not... It has been received. And
good.
I have not yet gone over to pick it up from Boss Man Wayne.
Okay.
But he verified receipt.
Good. Good.
And I have seen the correspondence.
And the entire Horn Family Community Congregation is going, what the fuck are they talking about? What is this, secret stuff? Yeah, Scott had emailed to me, had shipped to me a brand new set of seat cushions for the Gulfstream 5. with the image of Punky embroidered into it.
Yeah.
And a nice letter accompanying, so I have to pick them up. Yeah.
All right. Well,
we will go from there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a project that I hope we will see come to pass, because I think it's an opportunity, especially in these summer months.
Oh, I do too.
To get a twofer. It helps underwrite the Horn, and it for some lucky number of Horn family members, it'll make them feel good. And you know, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the whole point of radio is to connect and to communicate, and it will offer them a form of connection and stuff that will make them smile as they do a good turn, you know, for the future of the broadcast. So, you know, I don't know if you want to.
We will not
hold it off for another time, but it's worth pursuing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking in the coming week. Yes.
Okay. And they're probably saying, well, what the hell do seat cushions for a super priced jet have to do? Well, there must be mysteries in life. I guess that's what it is, folks, and you'll know when you know. Let me take a big slurp of my coffee here. Tell you, if you listen carefully, you can hear the taste buds cheering like little munchkins in my mouth. Too hot.
Cream or straight? I mean, do you put a little cream in it or a little? I mean, since it's instant, I mean, maybe a little coffee mate powder stuff, or do you just do it straight?
Well, let's not kill the illusion, Bob. Let's face it, folks. I've got a death wish. First of all, it's instant coffee, and the water is microwaved. So there's that. To which I add the proper amount of instant coffee, to which I add one packet of Sweet and Low, to which I add one packet of Splenda, to which I add a dollop of 2% milk, and I wonder why I'm just fading fast.
God, am I?
No.
So you like the sweet of the Splenda, but you want that extra little, you want the little bitter kick that goes with the bitter of the instant coffee that comes from the Sweet and Low. Have I got it?
Well, it goes a little deeper than that. Back in the days when Pepsi-Cola had, Diet Pepsi had Cyclamate. We're talking about the late 60s.
Oh, yes,
70s.
I remember them. You could buy little clear bottles of nothing but Cyclamates.
Well, here's the deal.
And that stuff had to go off the market because apparently it made you grow eyeballs on your elbows or something.
Supposedly. Well, I think Canada, you can still get it up there, if I'm not mistaken. They just had it was just an overreaction on the part of
big government, you know, the big government. This is where you say big government.
Well, I guess it was somebody who had stock in the Sweet and Low company or whatever. But anyway, as a reaction, Pepsi had a blend of saccharin and some other sweetener, because there's a compounding effect in terms of the sweetness index if you use two sweeteners instead of one. And Sweet and Low alone wasn't cutting it. And I said, well, I wonder if I could get a bigger sweetness impact. I've got my lab coat on and my slide rule and pens and pencils in my shirt pocket. Giving a little lecture on sweetness impact. But yes, I found that for my particular sense of taste, that works the best for me.
You've worked it. You've gotten it down to a science.
Maybe I need to go get a coffee maker and start brewing coffee again. Maybe that will put me in good graces with folks. But hell, when was I ever interested in being in anyone's good graces? Come on, let's not go off the deep end with this stuff. But
well, here.
Let me ask you a question. What was Gorbachev up to back when he was the head of things in the former Soviet Union? Was he a good guy or a bad guy?
The reason
I ask is Putin is so obviously an evil force in the universe. I can't help but think that Gorbachev might have been a good guy. There are some who will tell you that Khrushchev, on some level, was a good guy.
Right. Anything compared to Stalin. But Gorbachev, on balance, was deemed to be a good guy. But Gorbachev was also responding to his times, and given the way that revolutions run in Russia, I think he was engaging in some enlightened self-preservation because he didn't want to wind up against a wall with a blindfold and a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Soviet Union was in full-on collapse.
Yeah.
Now, what happens after that is with the, it starts with perestroika, and then it goes forward with just wide-open kleptocratic capitalism. And that's, that's the whole process from Gorbachev to, Boris Yeltsin, who decided that he would be a benign alcoholic, but Putin worked under Yeltsin,
mm-hmm.
and so he almost looks a little bit inevitable. And given the fact of his KGB background, he may have been. But he also behaves in the typical fashion of most Russian dictators. And that is, and most dictators anywhere, any tin pot dictator, and that is to grab it with both hands and your feet if you can get them in. You get the front trotters in the trough first, and then you work till you get the back trotters in too, and you show your teeth to anybody who tries to get near the trough.
Mm-hmm.
It's just simple. It's simple hog behavior. Whether it's huggable, cuddleable, lovable, snuggleable Pootie, or Papa Doc and Baby Doc Duvalier, or anybody else who's ever looted their country. Shah of Iran,
Meanwhile, over here, if you can say this about the guy, Trump is a wide-eyed babe in the woods in the sense that he doesn't know which end is up. He talks what he thinks.
Oh, that silly little prick couldn't find his ass with both hands. Okay.
Yeah.
Once again, the most seminal statement about him comes from Charlie Pierce, who says he's a guy who doesn't know anything about anything. He shot his mouth off about British internal politics because he doesn't know you don't do that, and even if he knew you don't do that, he did it anyway. Because he operates around a core idea of himself as being a deal maker. So what he's trying to do is empower the hard right, the hard proto-fascist, fascist-ish right in Britain to topple Theresa May as prime minister and get someone more to his liking, another guy with terrible hair in the form of Boris Johnson, in as prime minister. Hopefully his endorsement of Boris Johnson will be enough to make sure that Boris Johnson can never get elected so much as dog catcher.
Well, but, I'll leave you with the question of the day, Bob,
yes.
In my estimation. So all that being said, the foregoing being taken and put onto the record, the question then becomes, or maybe there's a through line question-wise, how is it that we have ourselves stuck for the moment with Trump? Did he stumble his way into it? Was he handpicked by somebody and manipulated into it? Because if we're not seriously pursuing questions on that level,
Scott, I'm at a point where it's this simple. He is and has been a Russian asset. Okay, he was groomed as one back when they were giving him money. And when you get and when the mob gets its hooks in you, no matter which mob it is, they don't take the hooks out. And Russian oligarchs got their hooks in him via money and probably sex for the purpose of advancing the agenda of huggable, snuggable, cuddly, lovable, wouldn't hurt a fly, pooty poot. But I think the best analysis comes in an email that I got from Darlene in Connecticut a little bit ago. And again, thanks to Darlene for meeting Robert's challenge, and thanks to Charlene for following on that as well. Again, we knocked it down to 365 this evening, so we've got a fighting chance tomorrow evening. But Darlene wrote a little bit ago, subject line, Russian asset. Russian agent and desirous of world dictatorial power. That's why he admires all the despots and dictators. Trump wants to be one of them, and moreover, he wants to be the leader among dictators. But that won't sit well with Putin. So the hope is they will eventually turn on and eat each other in the name of absolute wealth and power. It reminds me of the relationship between the little guy with the Charlie Chaplin mustache and the guy in Italy. Now, Mussolini, with whom Trump bears a shocking resemblance.
Oh, mannerisms and all.
Yeah, with the crossed arms and the chin and the face and the pouty and the right. You shave Trump's head and it's like, I'm a back. Mussolini more or less invented fascism as we know it in its 20th century form. And he saw himself as sort of an elder statesman of fascism. And kind of early on looked paternalistically toward Hitler. Oh, look, you know, it's my disease is spreading. Oh. Hitler, meanwhile, always understood that Mussolini was a thug and a clown. And I think that, you know, whether it's Erdogan in Turkey or Duterte in the Philippines or Putin or, you know, Xi in China, they all look at the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini and know that he's a thug and a clown and added into the mix a goddamned idiot because he is all of those things. But he also operates in full Dunning-Kruger fashion from the standpoint of his own mythology, Scott. There is no world, only Trump. To reach back for a Ghostbusters reference, there is only Zool. Well, we've got President Zool. Or for the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fans, and I know Lee in New York is one. We've got unmistakably, unchallengeably, we've got President Zaphod Beeblebrox. And the Hitchhiker's Guide fans out there are going, well, yeah, we knew that. Thanks for all the fish.
Well, here's what I want to know, and I'm not old enough to remember McCarthyism, I was around during the waning time of McCarthyism, but I certainly am old enough to have read up on it and to have watched documentaries about it, and to have, once every couple of years, I reread John Henry Falk's book, Fear on Trial. And a few years ago, I was lucky enough to get the CBS made-for-TV movie of the book that was came out, I think, in 75, okay? And for anybody not familiar with the case, it was about blacklisting of a radio talent who worked for CBS Radio in New York back in the 50s. And it's a book worth reading and then rereading, because it was a time when all there had to be was a whisper, a mere hint of being a commie, okay? And your ass would be hauled up before the House Un-American Activities Committee. You would be thrown out of a job. You couldn't get work. You and your family suffered horribly, and it even caused some people in the in the entertainment and news industries to kill themselves,
yes,
out of frustration at the madness of it and the debilitating effects of the blacklist. So when I say I remember a time when Russian operatives, even accused Russian operatives, were called to account, will there be a time of accounting with this guy, Trump, and his operatives and his enablers?
Right, and the question, and it loops back to the original, the only way that happens, it's like what I said with what Representative Sheila Jackson Lee said, the only way that happens is if we throw these crooks out in November. Then the subpoenas will fly. Mm-hmm. Then the hearings will be held. Then the questions that matter will actually be asked. I got to get out of here,
right,
Scott, because we're past time. But
of that is happening, Bob, at this time.
No,
which makes it paramount for us to bring it. Between now and November, just to do everything that we possibly can do, up to and including kicking some money to the horn to keep these types of conversations going, because it's critical that something be done, that attention be paid. So I'll close on that, and you have a good, good evening.
And enjoy that cup of Joe.
It's all saucered and blowed and ready to sip some more.
Hot diggity. Scott, take care.
All right, Bob.
Thanks for the call. Bye now. Our buddy Scott in San Diego. I had a note from Darlene in Connecticut. She said she would really like it if her answer to Robert was to be considered a rolling challenge. So if that, having been said, there's $75 to go on it because Charlene answered. So that would take us down to 290 to go. So hopefully we can get there. Again, remember, please, tomorrow's a truncated version. If you want to do Friday on the front porch, jump in early because we'll be, we'll be getting at it almost immediately after the start of the program. And because because it's always good to end with a laugh, courtesy of Lee in New York. When you said that Gorbachev did not want to be executed, it reminded me of this from the list of classic jokes. Three men, an Italian, a Frenchman, and a Jew, were condemned to be executed. Their captors told them that they had the right to have a final meal before the execution. They asked the Frenchman what he wanted. Give me some good French wine and French bread, he requested, and they gave it to him, and he ate it, and they executed him. Then it was the Italian's turn. They're giving me a bigger plate of pasta, said the Italian. So they brought him a big plate of pasta. He ate it. They executed him. Well, it came to the Jew's turn. "I want a big bowl of strawberries," said the Jew. "Strawberries," said his executioners, "they aren't even in season. So I'll wait." Oh, God, that's, you know, the old ones are the best ones. Thanks, everybody. Y'all have a wonderful evening. And thanks again for all of you who do so much to keep the program on the air. Thank you so very much. I can never thank you enough. It is a community you have built, and that you, through your persistence, insist continues. Thanks to everybody who engages in and shares their precious finite time engaging in the program, even the weird ones. We're lucky we don't have many of those. And thanks, of course, to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.